So you've told me a lot of times, you see all of these symbols, maybe things I've done or written down or other people, and you're not quite sure what they are. So we're gonna go over very basic symbols, specifically ones from logic and set theory. So this is a piece of paper you gave me. You said that some of them you don't really understand. So we're here to clarify this. Let's start with the very basic ones, the connective, this one. If we have any statement, phi, and let's say another statement, psi, and we want to say that both of them hold at the same time. All right, so normally you'd say phi and psi. So we use this small wedge to say and. So this means phi holds and psi holds.
So what does that actually mean? Like, give me a practical example.
So for example, you want to say 3 is a prime number and 3 is odd. You will write this down and you can write the statement 3 is prime and 3 is odd. And then you can put this little thing to say both of those things are true. Now, let's say that you want phi and psi, and you want to say at least one of them is true. Maybe one of them's not, maybe both are true, but at least one of them is true. So this is or, and you flip the wedge. So for example, it's raining or it's not raining. One of them is true, the other is not. As a whole, the statement is true.
In that case, the two, only one can be true.
That's right.
But you told me when I use that symbol, that down wedge, or one of they could both be true.
Yes.
Oh, so it could be it's raining and the sun's out.
For example, that's a good example, right? That's how you get rainbows.
Is there a symbol where only one can be true?
So on this list, that would be this plus. I actually wouldn't use that. We don't use that as much in math. So in those cases, normally you just spell it out and you say exactly one of those things is true. But in computer science, for example, if you understand logical operation, exclusive OR, right, or XOR is exactly this. Only one of those is right. Let's do negation. Let's say that something is false. So the fact that it is false is a true statement. So you want to say this is not true. So 2 is not an odd number. Although it's odd being the only even prime, but it's not an odd number. So this is this little upper bracket, I guess. Sometimes people use this tilde symbol. This is phi is false. Let's talk about implications. So the idea of implication is can be a little bit confusing sometimes outside of mathematical, well, outside of any math. We just use this arrow to mean that if phi is true, then psi is true. Now, it tells you nothing about the truth of phi, and it tells you nothing about the truth of psi. All it tells you is that if this is true, then this is true. If it's raining, take an umbrella. Tells you nothing about whether or not it's raining.
Can you give me a more mathy example?
If a number is even, then it is not odd. This double arrow just means this and also the other direction. So this is phi implies psi and psi implies phi. So this is true exactly when that is true.
How's that different from the first one?
So the first one just tells you that if phi is true, then psi is true. If it's raining, take an umbrella. If I took an umbrella, tells you nothing about whether or not it's raining. In this case, right, I take an umbrella if and only if it's raining.
So if I see someone with an umbrella, I know it's raining.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in this case, with that single arrow, phi has all the power.
Kind of, yeah. It's a stronger condition, right? If you know phi, then you know psi. Now, what about these double ones? Well, here it gets slightly more complicated. We write this to indicate a statement about statements. All we've done here is part of the language of mathematics, right? So if I want to write a formal statement, this is what I use. Now I want to make a statement about those statements, right? So for example, in some context, this would be true, then in that context, this would also be true. So this is called sometimes material implication. Now, mind you, a lot of people will use those things very interchangeably, and there's little to no difference to them. If you're working in, let's say, the very basic logical frameworks, then there's a way to think of them as being exactly the same. However, if you want to be formal and technical about that, this is a statement about the fine psi and the truth. This is what's called as a meta statement. It's kind of hard to explain that without going into a lot of nitty-gritty of how logic works and what does it mean to be a true statement, because truth is understood within a context. This is why a lot of the time people don't bother to, you know, differentiate between them. But if you talk to a logician, which I turned out to be one, there is a difference. So these are called quantifiers. So this is for all, the A is for all, and the E is exists. So you want to say that for any number, you know, something is true. Then you can say for all X, right? So for all X, if X is greater than, let's say, 1, then X is greater or equal than 2. Then you can take this statement and interpret it in a context, for example, in the natural numbers. So for any X, if it's greater than 1, it's greater or equal than 2. That's true, right? If you consider the rational numbers, 1.5 tells you that this thing is false. Similarly, you can say that there exists an X such that whatever, right, that X plus X equals 1. So there exists X such that X plus itself equals 1. Again, false in the natural numbers, true in the rationals.
The statement doesn't have to be true or false. It's just a statement that's being made.
It's just a statement, yeah.
Okay, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly like, it's raining outside is a statement. Is it true? Is it false? You need to check, you need to understand, you need to ask where is outside, right? Are we in England? Are we in Morocco? Are we in Brazil? All places may or may not be raining.
What's the E with the line through it?
So this is just not. This is just the way to write does not exist. Well, this is something that we use less often, this, because it's just negation of exist. Okay, we can talk about this some other time. Let's move to the set theory symbols.
All right, we'll come back to those other logic symbols another time, if people request it.
Yeah.
Do you want another piece of paper? Let me get you another piece of paper.
Okay, let's talk about symbols from set theory now. So first of all, what's a set? Just like the number 3 is a mathematical abstraction of how many fingers am I holding up right now, a set is the concept of a collection. So you can think of the collection of all the books on your shelf or all the rocks or all the other incredible things that you have in your office. These are different sets.
In mathematics?
Yes.
A set, obviously a set isn't a collection of books, and it's not,
yes,
a collection of rocks.
Right.
Is the set always a collection of numbers? What else can you collect sets
of?
So
that's a great question. Sets are collections of mathematical objects which are themselves a mathematical object.
So what's a mathematical object? Could it also be polygons or...
Yes. So a mathematical object is simply something that we think of as an abstract idea that you can find in mathematics. It could be a number or a function or a number field or a collection of vectors or anything. Right, so the first one is the empty set. Now, a lot of people would think that this is a phi, which is a Greek letter, but it is in fact a letter in the Danish alphabet, which I'm not even going to try and pronounce because I will get completely burned on that in the comments. It was introduced by, I think, Bourbaki in the 1930s, simply as a simple way of writing something's empty. Before that, there were other symbols. I don't remember any of them. So what is the empty set? It's simply a set that has no elements.
But it's not zero.
It's, well, zero is a number. Now, you may recall another video we've made where you can think about numbers in terms of sets, and you can think of this as being zero. You can think of zero as just a representation of how many elements, how many members are in this set.
So the empty set is not no set.
Exactly. It's the common analogy, and this analogy breaks down real fast, but it helps here, is think of a set as being a bag containing stuff. An empty bag is not no bag. If you're heading out to the supermarket and you have an empty bag, you still have a bag. Again, this analogy will break down as soon as you move from that. Let's do this. So if we have A and B, our two sets, and we look at that, so this is the set difference. So this means the part of A that is not in B. What does that even mean?
Is it the same as minus? Is it A minus B?
Yeah, exactly. It's A minus B. So you can think of sets as being some kind of an abstract property.
So if A was all the prime numbers, mm-hmm. and B was all the odd prime numbers, mm-hmm. 2 is in bag A, but it's not in bag B.
Yes.
So is the difference there 2?
Is the set whose only element is 2.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. That's a very good... Very good.
The result of this, after I do the calculation or the working out, is a new set.
Yes.
With a bunch of things in it. That is the difference.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
And the difference could be empty.
If they're the same.
Or if maybe B was larger, right? Take A to be the set of prime numbers, B the set of all numbers. If you remove all numbers from all the prime numbers, you get nothing.
Right.
Right. So then you have this little C over here, which sometimes people use like that. Now, this is used more in introductory classes. Once you move on to more advanced set theory, this kind of loses meaning and becomes different. And we already have so many things in this kind of exponentiation notation. So we don't really use that in research. But it means the part outside of A. So it's all the things that are not in A.
That could be pretty... I mean... It
could be pretty big.
Is that not always infinite?
Well, it depends on the context, right? This is why we don't use that in actual research. Because...
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, so if you say, my interest right now is just the natural numbers. That's it. Then if you look at all the odd numbers, and you look at the complement, then everything that's not an odd number is?
Even number, right.
The set of even numbers, exactly.
Okay.
So that would be everything outside. But that depends on what is the context, what is the whole set that you're dealing with right now. Okay, let's do these guys, because they're actually analog for the logic ones. So we have this.
What's that called?
So this is called an intersection. And in a way, it's kind of like the AND symbol, and you can see that it's shaped kind of similarly. And in very old notation, it was in fact used to indicate the same thing. So this is the common part of A and B.
So if I was saying that out loud, do I say AND or NO? What do I say? How would you say that out loud?
A intersection B or A intersect B. So, for example, if we stick with the natural number example, if you look at the set of prime numbers and you intersect it with the set of even numbers, what do you get?
2.
Just one element, which is the number 2. Similarly, we have a union B, which would be all the things that are in at least one of those. Everything which is in A or in
So if A was the even numbers and B was the odd numbers, the result would be the natural numbers.
Exactly. So now, let's say that you want to say, what would be an implication, right? So to think about being in A implies that you're in B, that would be what we call set inclusion. So A is a subset of B. So A is a subset of B.
Does that mean that everything in A has to be somewhere in B.
Exactly. Right. It's exactly what it means. This is a notation that is kind of very, I'm not going to say divisive, but there are some strong opinions on this. So if you have this small line down here, it's kind of like less or equal. So it allows the possibility that A maybe is equal to B.
Yeah.
Right. Because suddenly everything that is in A is also in itself, is an A. And then you can have without that, and some people will say, oh, this is not equal, right? So this means that A is a subset of B and A is not equal to B.
So B has to have more elements in it.
Yes. But other people would say, no, this is just the same thing as that.
Right.
So what I normally do is you add this and you say, no, this is a strict subset. So you add this line, so this would be here.
So if if Asaf has put that little extra line in there, he's saying to me, B must be bigger than A.
Exactly.
A is a smaller thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly that. And then you can say that it's just not a subset by just saying the whole thing is not true. Right, so let me put this.
So if I see that, there is something in A that is not in B.
Exactly. Very good. You could be a set theorist.
No, I could not.
The last one we're going to talk about here is going to be this and the negation of it. So this is actually not a connection between two sets, but between something and a set. So when I write that small a is this symbol.
What's that symbol called?
So this is the membership symbol.
Membership.
Yeah, so this means that A is an element or a member of capital A. So for example, 3 is a member of the set of prime numbers, also of the set of odd numbers and many other sets. Now you can put this line to say this is not true. So A is not a member of A.
So 4 is not a member of the prime numbers.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about some examples for sets that are very common throughout mathematics. Now, mind you, as with any notation, just like the letter that you write for A has a different name or even maybe a different meaning in different languages, these two might be used in a non-standard way in different fields of mathematics. But here's how the common kind of most...
This is how you use them anyway.
Yeah, well, actually, no. This is called blackboard bold font. It was... I'm guessing used to indicate a bold-faced letter on a blackboard where it's kind of harder. Although you can just break off a piece of chalk and put it sideways, but whatever. You can't do that with a pen though. So it's good that we have this.
Yep.
So this is just a bold-face N, which is normally the set of natural numbers.
Right. Non-negative integers.
Now, I think I've said it last time, there's a point of contention whether or not 0 is a natural number. It is. Let's just put it out there. But in some context, it's easier to omit it. Next, we have this blackboard Z, or Z, depending where you are in the world. And this is the set of integers. So that would be 0 and 1 and minus 1 and 2 and minus 2. And so on in both directions. So this is all the whole numbers. Next we have Q, again, blackboard bold, which is the rational numbers. So these are ratios of integers. So this is 1, which is 1 divided by 1, and 1 half, and 3 ninths.
Well, it's 1 third, but yeah.
Same thing.
Okay.
Or 7 halves, which also known as 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
But not the square root of 2.
But not the square root of 2. To get that, we go to the real numbers, which is the blackboard font with R. So these are the real numbers. And these include things like pi and e and the square root of 2 and many, many other numbers. And one number they don't include is I, which is the imaginary unit, the square root of minus 1, or a square root of minus 1. To have that, you go to C, again, blackboard bold, which is their complex numbers. You have here a few letters in Hebrew.
Oh, yeah.
We use Aleph a lot. Bet also has a prescribed meaning. Gimel and Daled, not so much. But to talk about these, we need to do a whole other video.
Aleph will actually feature heavily in a whole other video with Asaf, which is coming very soon. It's all about absolute infinity, so stay tuned or subscribed for that. Also, have a look at the links in the video description for more videos, podcasts, and links relating to this work.
Aleph 1 is the size of how many types you can get from well ordering of the natural numbers.
But it's not all the different ways you can rearrange them.
It's not.
No.
That is actually 2 to the Aleph naught.